Hi, Dave Emery here. This is side one of For the Record program number 810, titled A Prince Too Far. This is being recorded on September 14th of the year 2014. The title of the program refers to a movie called A Bridge Too Far, that in turn is based on a book by Cornelius Ryan of the same title. What that is about is the Battle of Arnhem, capital A-R-N-H-E-M, during the Second World War. That battle was the largest airdrop in the history of warfare. The battle was fought on September 17th through 19th of 1944. The 70th anniversary of that battle is coming up, and that is what the title refers to. Now, what we're going to be looking at in this program is the Battle of Arnhem, what I call the Underground Reich, and the Bilderbergers group. That's spelled capital B-I-L-D-E-R-B-E-R-G-E-R. It is named for the Bilderberger Hotel in the Netherlands that is very, very close to the city of Arnhem. And that is where the first meeting of this power elite group of heads of state, particularly military leaders and key industrialists and national security related figures as well. The Bilderberger Conference was founded by Prince Bernhard, B-E-R-N-H-A-R-D, zu Lippe von Biesterfeld. Now, he was a German noble, obviously, from the title. In addition to that, he was a major in the SS for a period of time, and perhaps even more importantly, he was connected to the Berlin NW7 office of IG Farben, the powerful Nazi chemical cartel, with links to most of the world's powerful corporations, including and especially U.S. corporations. The IG was at the epicenter of the Third Reich. The successor companies are at the epicenter of the Underground Reich and the Bormann Capital Network, about which I speak so often. Prince Bernhard married Queen Juliana of the Netherlands. He then became basically the Queen's consort, and he fled to the United Kingdom after the fall of the Netherlands in World War II to the Nazi Blitzkrieg. And then Prince Bernhard became the head of the, quote, resistance, unquote, or the Dutch resistance. One of the supposed enigmas of World War II is why the Dutch resistance fared so badly. Basically, they did fare very badly, although they were very heroic and had a number of heroic accomplishments. They also got royally reamed, and I use the term royally advisedly here. Sometimes, I think, an important element of this discipline is understanding the emperor's new clothes. And let's just say for our purposes here that when the head of your anti-fascist resistance cadre is an SS officer and a spy for IG Farben, you really shouldn't be all that surprised when your resistance movement goes all to hell. What we're going to be looking at in this program is the betrayal of the Battle of Arnhem. That was a disaster for the Allies. The idea, it was hatched, it was called Operation Market Garden, and the idea was to drop a huge number of British and American paratroopers, some Polish as well, free Poles, behind German lines to capture key bridges and to basically cut off a German retreat. The idea was to permit the Allied forces to flank the German front line, the so-called Siegfried Line, defending Germany and the Rhine. And the idea was to bring the war to an early close. The Battle of Arnhem was a disaster. It did not bring the war to an early close. And the basic reason is that there is fundamental evidence that the battle plans, the Allied battle plans, were betrayed to the Nazis. The person who has always been usually fingered as the Traitor of Arnhem is a Dutch resistance fighter named Christian Lindemans, last name L-I-N-D-E-M-A-N-S. His nickname was Christ, K-R-I-S-T. His code name was King Kong, after the gigantic ape. I guess he was, because he was huge in stature, and he was viewed as the biggest and greatest gorilla of them all. There was a pun there. The evidence suggests very strongly that, in fact, Christian Lindemans was not the real traitor of Arnhem. To make a very long story very short, Christian Lindemans, a Dutch resistance fighter, was ordered to become a triple agent. He was ordered to report to the Germans, ostensibly to betray the Dutch resistance to the Gestapo. In reality, he was told that he would continue to work for the resistance, even though ostensibly going over to the Gestapo as a double agent. Then Christian Lindemans was left out in the cold, kind of like Lee Harvey Oswald, who was infiltrated into the former Soviet Union, then into pro-Castro organizations, and then left out in the cold, tarred as a commie and killed before he could defend himself against charges of having murdered President Kennedy. And Christian Lindemans appears to have been similarly betrayed. And we're going to be looking at the Battle of Arnhem again, the 70th anniversary of which is coming up on September 17th through 19th. And we're going to be taking a look at Prince Bernhard and the Bilderbergers. We're also going to be taking a look at the apparent underground Reich affiliations of Prince Bernhard's heirs in the Dutch royal family. And we're also going to take a look at a very interesting chairman of several of the Bilderberger conferences, and that is Lord Peter Arrington of the United Kingdom. As Peter Carrington, he was a key figure also in the Battle of Arnhem and has been blamed by some military analysts for his failure to advance his column of tanks to relieve the besieged British 1st Airborne Division in Arnhem, resulting in that division's annihilation. Later, Lord Carrington, in addition to being a chairman of the Bilderberger conferences, was a British foreign secretary at the time that the Argentine fascist junta, involving many members of the Argentine P2, invaded and took over the Falkland Islands, despite abundant warning that that was going to happen. Lord Carrington resigned because of that, and there was also an interesting incident in which the battle plans for part of the British military campaign, a successful military campaign to retake the Falklands, was betrayed by being broadcast on the BBC. And here we wonder to what extent Lord Carrington was a deliberate party to the betrayal at Arnhem, and to what extent he also was an underground Reich traitor helping to lull the British into a false sense of security, thereby permitting the Argentine fascists to occupy the Falklands. And might it have been Lord Carrington who betrayed part of the British military campaign by having it broadcast, those plans broadcast on the BBC? So, A Prince Too Far is the name of our program, looking at Prince Bernhard, the underground Reich, the Battle of Arnhem, the traitor of Arnhem, the Bilderbergers, and also Lord Carrington and the Falkland Wars. First of all, we're going to begin with a story from Radio Netherlands Worldwide from January 23rd of 2010. Cabinet knew of Prince Bernhard's SS past, and it reads in part, "The Dutch government knew of the SS membership of the late Prince Bernhard as early as 1944, according to NRC Handelsblad, that's H-A-N-D-E-L-S-B-L-A-D. The newspaper bases its finding on documents released by the National Archive in The Hague earlier this year. One of the documents refers to a coded telegram dated September 1944. Interestingly enough, that was the month of the Battle of Arnhem, Operation Market Garden beginning again. One of the documents refers to a coded telegram dated September 1944 from Foreign Minister Eelco van Kleffens, that's capital E-E-L-C-O, V-A-N, capital K-L-E-F-F-E-N-S. The telegram reveals the cabinet knew Prince Bernhard had briefly joined the SS. In the telegram, the foreign minister instructs the Dutch ambassador in the U.S. not to refute claims made by American media as of 1941 that Prince Bernhard had been a member of the SS. For many years, Prince Bernhard remained evasive on his links with the Nazi NSDAP party and related organizations. In an interview with Die Volkskrant, that's capital D-E, capital V as in Victor, O-L-K-S-K-R-A-N-D, published shortly after the prince's death in December of 2004, the prince admitted to his SS membership for the first time. And excerpting a book called Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler by Anthony Sutton, Chapter 2, The Empire of I.G. Farben, about the Berlin NW7 office, we read, the Berlin NW7 office of I.G. Farben was the key Nazi overseas espionage center. The unit operated under Farben director Max Ildner, I-L-G-N-E-R, nephew of I.G. Farben president Hermann Schmitz. By the way, Hermann Schmitz was one of Martin Bormann's right-hand men in the Nazi flight capital program and the post-war Bormann capital network. Continuing. Max Ildner and Hermann Schmitz were on the board of American IG with fellow directors Henry Ford of Ford Motor Company, Paul Warburg of Bank of Manhattan, and Charles E. Mitchell of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. At the outbreak of war in 1939, VOWI employees were ordered into the Wehrmacht, but in fact continued to perform the same work when as nominally under IG Farben. One of the more prominent of these Farben intelligence workers in NW7 was Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, who joined Farben in the early 1930s after completion of an 18-month period of service in the black-uniformed SS. The U.S. arm of the VO1 intelligence network was Chemnico Incorporated. According to the War Department, utilizing normal business contacts, Chemnico was able to transmit to Germany tremendous amounts of material ranging from photographs and blueprints to detailed descriptions of whole industrial plants. And in the footnote, Prince Bernhard is today better known for his role as chairman of the secretive so-called Bilderberger meetings. Now again, the title A Prince Too Far comes from the movie A Bridge Too Far, which was named after the book by Cornelius Ryan of the same name about the Battle of Arnhem. Now, again, the idea for Operation Market Garden, conceived of by Field Marshal General Bernard Montgomery of the United Kingdom, was to drop a huge number of primarily British and American paratroopers behind German lines, seizing key bridges, and thereby permitting the Allies to turn the German flank and cut behind the German front lines, shortening the war. Now, as we will see, the plans for the Battle of Arnhem were deliberately betrayed to the Germans. That betrayal has generally been hung on Christian Lindemans, again, L-I-N-D-E-M-A-N-S, as we will see in what we're about to read. Christian Lindemans, a heroic Dutch resistance fighter, had been ordered by Prince Bernhard and the Dutch resistance leadership to become a triple agent. He was ostensibly to go over to the Gestapo and pretend to be a traitor while actually continuing to work for the resistance. What appears to have happened is that he was left out in the cold. He was fingered as the traitor of Arnhem, and ultimately he was imprisoned in a psychiatric ward and died. A book about Christian Lindemans and what happened to him is called Betrayal at Arnhem by Anna, A-N-N-E, Lawrence, capital L-A-U-R-E-N-S. The softcover edition was published by Charter Books and copyright 1969. And of Christian Lindemans and the scenario that I have just described, we read, three times at least, Dutch resistance fighter Cas de Graaf, G-R-A-A-F, summoned Christian Lindemans to the prince's headquarters for official questioning, which was merely presented as a rough precis after the event, and which was held in a most irregular way. The prince, of course, Prince Bernhard. Officially, Christian with two A's Mindemans was simply informed that he was only being asked to report on his past missions before new ones were assigned to him. But one would have to have been made of stone not to sense the atmosphere of these sessions. The word, therefore, passed round rapidly that it was only a front, that they were trying to make Christian responsible for a certain number of disasters and, quote, accidents, unquote, the most important of which was the betrayal at Arnhem. More about this, so you can hear of a British intelligence officer, Oreste Pinto, O-R-E-S-T-E, Pinto, P-I-N-T-O. He blamed Prince Bernhard for not having figured out that Christian Lindemans was a traitor. Bear in mind that Prince Bernhard had ordered Christian Lindemans to become a triple agent and then left him out in the cold. Going back to Betrayal at Arnhem by Anna Lawrence. When he summoned Christian to his office in Anvers, he was told by the prince's headquarters that if his, quote, suspect was unable to come, it would be because he had left on a mission. British intelligence officer Oreste Pinto was furious. As he had rather strained relations with the headquarters of Prince Bernhard, he immediately held the prince responsible for this crime of high treason, stating that although he knew of the suspected treachery of Christian Lindemans, Prince Bernhard preferred to shut his eyes to it rather than admit that this war hero was really a hired enemy agent. After this, Pinto swore that he would not rest until he had proved the allegations that he had really only thrown at random under the influence of his jealous temper. Unfortunately for Christian, Pinto was not the only one who felt vindictive towards him. At the Chateau Rubens, R-U-B-E-N-S, the headquarters of Prince Bernhard, who later transferred his headquarters to the Chateau Vitouc, W-I-T-D-O-U-C-K, where a conflict was developing among the members of different Dutch information services, it was decided to sacrifice Christian Lindemans. It was merely a question of waiting for the right time. And then still more. This is critical here because it talks about the disposition of the German units which destroyed the Allied forces at Arnhem. And as we will see, they were moving into place before Christian Lindemans reported to Gestapo headquarters. So the responsibility for the betrayal at Arnhem could not have been Christian Lindemans's. Again, he was ordered to ostensibly become a traitor while actually being a triple agent. He was then left out in the cold. But as we will see when we talk about the disposition of the German units, he could not have been the traitor. At the beginning of September of 1944, there had been only a few scattered units of German troops in Holland. On September 8th, these were joined by four divisions equipped with tanks and mobile guns, some of these mounted on the undercarriages of Panther tanks. These forces included the 9th and 10th divisions of the 2nd SS Panzer Corps. Until diverted to Arnhem, one of these had been scheduled to return to Germany from France. The other was preparing to leave Denmark. On the day of the Arnhem drop, General Wilhelm Willy Beitrich, B-I-T-T-R-I-C-H, parenthetically of the SS, was to command all these forces with the backing of Berlin and over the opposition of Model and Student. What had alerted Beitrich long before Christian Lindemans arrived at Adler headquarters in Dreibergen to the Allied plans? How was he able to form a formidable armored force in Holland without the intelligence service of SHAFE, Supreme Headquarters Allied Expeditionary Forces, being alerted? Of all the reasons for the debacle at Arnhem, the most important was the loss of the element of surprise. Somebody had betrayed the Allied plans to the Germans, but the betrayer could not have been Christian Lindemans. By the time he had entered the picture, everything had already been set in motion. Was it possible that he had been used as a scapegoat? Had Christian Lindemans betrayed his country, or was he an innocent victim sacrificed to cover up for the real traitor? I think that is a rhetorical question by Ms. Lawrence. Certainly, when the head of the Dutch resistance and when Christian Lindemans' ultimate superior and handler was not only an SS officer, but a spy for the Berlin NW7 office. I don't think this is the greatest of mysteries. Now, quickly to the strategic situation of Arnhem. We're going to jump to the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, by the heroic Paul Manning, a protege and colleague of Edward R. Murrow, who began his investigation initially underwritten by CBS News. They would not touch that. But Manning began his investigation at the encouragement of his friend and colleague, Edward R. Murrow. And of a 1944, August 1944 meeting in Strasbourg of Alsace-Lorraine, at which the plans for the Bormann Flight Capital Network and basically Aktion Adlerflug, the flight of the Nazi Flight Capital, we read as follows. Again, this is August of 1944, about a month or so before Arnhem. A smaller conference in the afternoon was presided over by Dr. Bosse, B-O-S-S-E, of the German Armaments Ministry. It was attended only by representatives of Heckel, Krupp, and Röckling. Those are three German companies. Dr. Bosse related Bormann's belief that the war was all but lost, but that it would be continued by Germany until certain goals to ensure the economic resurgence of Germany after the war had been achieved. He added that German industrialists must be prepared to finance the continuation of the Nazi Party, which would be forced to go underground, just as had the Marquis in France. By the way, that entire book is available for download for free on the SpitfireList.com website. So note that even though the Germans felt the war was lost, it was going to be continued until the Bormann Flight Capital program was fulfilled and the critical wealth necessary for German economic resurgence and the underground perpetuation of the Nazi Party and the Third Reich was to be continued. By the way, that was from captured German documents that... And actually, there was a transcription that was made by a resistance fighter in France who was a secretary at the meeting, or a stenographer, I've forgotten which. But that's actually from captured German documents that were copied by that individual. The aforementioned Prince Bernhard. So note again, had Operation Market Garden gone forward as planned, this would have forestalled the plans for the Bormann Flight Capital program. There are indications that Prince Bernhard was a witting collaborator of the Bormann Flight Capital Network, which should come as no surprise for an IG Farben spy and SS officer. And we're going to turn to an article by John Loftus, the former head of the Office of Special Investigations, which investigated Nazi war criminals in the U.S. And what we're going to be looking at here concerns Prince Bernhard's retrieval of documents which proved the links between a Dutch bank and German capital and the Thyssen organization and the Union Bank in the U.S. Basically, these documents proved the links between the Bush family and the Thyssen family and the Third Reich. Recall that George Herbert Walker and his son-in-law Prescott Bush were key officials with a number of, with basically the Union Bank, and were active collaborators with other Nazi firms as well. The documents that Prince Bernhard retrieved here would have proved the collaboration between the Thyssens and the Third Reich and this bank in the Netherlands and the Bush family in the U.S. The Dutch Connection, How a Famous American Family Made Its Fortune from the Nazis, by John Loftus. The link is in the description for the show. And again, the famous American family here, the Bush family. According to Gowan's source, Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands commanded a unit of Dutch intelligence which dug up the incriminating corporate papers in 1945 and brought them back to the, quote, neutral, unquote, bank in Rotterdam. The pretext was that the Nazis had stolen the crown jewels of his wife, Princess Juliana, and the Russians gave the Dutch permission to dig up the vault and retrieve them. Operation Juliana was a Dutch fraud on the Allies, who searched high and lo, for the missing pieces of the peace and fortune. As we looked at in For the Record 791, American holdings of the Bush family, including Union Bank, were an important element of the German flat capital network and the Bormann flat capital program. So again, note Prince Bernhard's role here in actively aiding the Bormann flat capital program and the Bormann capital network. Now note again, as we saw in that footnote, from the book Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler by Anthony Sutton, Prince Bernhard was best known as the founder of the Bilderberg conferences. And interestingly enough, one of the goals of the Bilderberger conference was European integration. And in a Source Watch entry about Bilderberg, Fiat's Gianni Agnelli articulated these goals, as we looked at in For the Record, Anti-Fascist Archive Program number 21 and number 19. Gianni Agnelli was a key member of Vittorio Gelli's P2 milieu in Italy. Gelli, a prominent American, Italian fascist, I should say, also an intimate of a number of powerful American figures, and Gelli had been the liaison officer between the Hermann Göring Division and Italian fascist elements in World War II. One of the goals of the Bilderbergers, as articulated by Gianni Agnelli, quote, "European integration is our goal, and where the politicians have failed, we industrialists hope to succeed." Please note that that basically is the goal of the German conquest of Europe. The EU and the EMU in particular are realizations of that goal, first articulated in the 19th century by German pan-theoretician Friedrich Liszt. And so one of the goals of the Bilderbergers, again, the Bilderberger conferences founded by Prince Bernhard, named for the Bilderberg Hotel right near Arnhem in the Netherlands, where the Operation Market Garden and the Battle of Arnhem took place. What we're going to be doing inside, too, is taking a look at the affiliations, the political affiliations, and apparent underground-like affiliations of Prince Bernhard's successors in the royal family of the Netherlands. I guess you could say that big oaks grew from the little acorns that fell off of the big oak that was Prince Bernhard, because his heirs have basically followed in the footsteps of their predecessor. We're also going to be taking a look in particular at the grandson of Prince Bernhard, who married the daughter of a member of the Argentine fascist junta that conducted the dirty war in the mid-1970s. That is more than a little interesting, because aid to that fascist junta and their invasion of the Falklands Islands may very well have been provided by Lord Peter Carrington, the British foreign secretary, the equivalent of our Secretary of State at the time. Lord Carrington was the chairman of several Bilderberger conferences and also played a very interesting role at the Battle of Arnhem, as we will see. This, however, concludes side one of For the Record Program 810, A Prince Too Far, being recorded on September 14th, 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.